a cold, far away world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stars that came here to earth, caught in their struggle through the whole universe. Robotic warriors.
Who's up to here? Welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure. TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. And now, without further ado, here is Weird Wolf. Now, where did I put that chorus stop? Ratchet, did you take the chorus stop?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, episode number 102, recorded May 2nd, 2014. I am your host, Weird Wolf. Along with me is Trans Jazz.
Hello, everyone.
Nats May Ryu.
Hello, I have a really slow connection. I'm sorry.
And Plasticon.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
And we also have a very special guest this week, Miss Samantha Newark. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, you guys.
I'm going to play a short video clip, and we will get to our guest, Miss Samantha Newark, very shortly. And here's a little short clip to show some of the work that she's done in the past, and hope you guys enjoy.
And this is Ariel. And keep away from her. She's my girlfriend.
Don't listen to him. He's just a jealous type.
I must have put something in backwards.
Look, I got the strangest meter readings off this box. Let's hook it up and see if it does anything. Anyway, we could always build another one, don't you think? You guys wouldn't have any spare parts lying around that we could use, would you?
Jam is truly outrageous.
Let's not get overconfident. We haven't won yet. One more change, Synergy.
As you wish.
Welcome, Ms. Newark, to TFYLP. Fans of, if you're listening to the show and haven't joined before, TFYLP is a podcast that we talk about Transformers and the things involving Transformers. And Ms. Newark has been a part of the franchise since Generation 1. And she's had a lot of things since. Would you like to tell us a little bit about how you got into your career and what you're doing now?
Sure. Well, hello, everybody. So nice to be invited. Thank you so much. On this new technology that I'm really actually very impressed with. This is very cool. I usually like call in on a cell phone or something. It's kind of fun. I guess I could call myself a showbiz brat. I've been in this business since I was 7 years old professionally. Did my first professional show when I was a little kid and toured in South Africa as a singer and got signed to a big group when I was like 10 years old, and then I got to do the state fair circuit and played like huge shows with some pretty huge artists, and it's just what I've done. I don't even know how to do anything else. I would be lost if I wasn't singing or you know, involved in the business somehow. And Gem was like this amazing, Gem and Transformers were such an awesome thing that happened along my journey in the business. And I feel very, very blessed that I'm still here all these years later talking about it to the fans. So,
awesome. Yeah, I was telling you in the pre-show, you know, my 8-year-old stepdaughter, and she's actually going to come down. She has a question or two for you.
Oh!
So she's going to come down here very shortly, and she'll talk to you. And my wife was a big fan back in the day, and I have to admit, I was a big fan of Gem too. I watched it. I mean, it was in that cartoon block, you know. But as I was saying, though, yeah, my 8-year-old stepdaughter, she she has quickly, in the last few days, become a big Gem fan. And like you can see in the background, I bought a box set, and she is absolutely enthralled with it. My wife, she watched it as a kid and thought that there was a lot of great lessons and everything that the show taught. And just the style and the music from it was really, really awesome. Like I said, I watched it too back in the day. I mean, you know, I know it was targeted mainly at girls, but, you know, it was in that cartoon block with Transformers, and I love 80s rock, and Gem was rocking, so I watched it, you know.
But, you know, and it was actually, I got to do this cartoon cereal party thing at the Alamo Draft House recently where they played Gem, back-to-back episodes of Gem on the big screen, and I got to rewatch a bunch of the episodes, and I was like, you know, it's like a soap opera for kids, and I think that children, boys and girls, really bonded with it because we were always told when we were reading, when we were doing the work, you know, we want it to sound real, we want you guys to sound like real kids, and I think that that really made a super connection with kids because we didn't sound really cartoony. It was meant to be like little morality plays for kids, and a lot of the subject matter was like pretty serious. Like revisiting it, I was like, "Wow, this is intense." They dealt with a lot of life lessons, and, you know, death and drugs and a lot of family stuff and family dynamics. So there was something there for boys and girls, and I think that's why it stood the test of time. I really do.
Yeah, it did. Now we've actually talked to some Transformers actors and the voice actors in the past, and I'll get it out here in a moment. And the animation styles and everything were very similar. I'm not sure, but I'm assuming that they were produced by same or similar studio as Transformers Gem was.
I think it was actually, yeah, through Sunbow, and all the animation was done in Korea, from what I understand. So, yeah, and that's why a lot of us from Gem worked on Transformers, because it was all part of the same collective. So
yeah,
it just
I noticed there was there's a few voice actor voices that crossed over. The guy that played Eric on the show, he I recognized his voice, and actually the character model that they used for the cartoon was very similar to a character that was used in Transformers in an episode called Money is Everything. And his character was Dirk Manis. Same voice, same look of the character.
Charlie Adler. And I actually just saw him on TMZ tonight. I was like, what? That's Charlie Adler. funny. Yeah.
But yeah, I'll go ahead and ask a question that my wife, Jenna, she has a question for you. I believe she's watching upstairs right now, but she said, try to remember what she wanted to ask. We know that the voice actors generally got into one room and did it like as a round table and played off of each character. Did you form close friendship bonds with any of the actors, the female actors in the show that last today that you were very close friends with?
We were different age demographics. I was the youngest in the cast, and that obviously did translate as far as we didn't hang out with each other outside of our work, and they were incredible and wonderful and so supportive, you know, when we worked together, but we didn't spend any time together outside of that because it didn't really make, you know, I was a kid, so they weren't really like spending time with me. I know some of the cast did, but I wasn't a part of that. But years later, I actually was doing Gem Con. I got invited to, it's a convention entirely dedicated to Gem and the Holograms, and it was in 2006 in Orlando, and I got to reunite with Patricia, the voice of Pizzazz. Freaking amazing, so talented, Patricia Albrecht. And I told her I was moving to Nashville. She lives in Nashville. So over the past 5 years, I'm now in Texas, but the 5 years that I was in Nashville, her and I became really good friends. So
awesome.
The Pizzazz and Jem are friends. Don't tell anybody.
One of the misfits. How dare you?
Amazing. We've done convention appearances together, and she's like, she's so flippin' awesome. I just adore her, and she can whip out the pizzazz attitude like nothing. Like, boom, it's right there. And yet, like, she's the sweet, perfect, wonderful girl, you know? So cool.
I was starting to say, you know, with the look of Jem, I mean, you're rocking the pink hair for Jem, so, uh-oh. My connection died again. It's Google Plus and
You locked up a little bit.
My internet connection kind of stinks, but
it's your internet.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, AT&T. But
I am rocking. Well, the fans have been for years. The fans are like, "Why don't you dress like Jem? Why don't you have pink?" And they've been saying that to me for a really long time. And then I wanted to change my hair because I've been blonde for like 6 or 7 years. And so I thought maybe I would do like a rosy gold. I was just sort of getting my little toes wet in the color world. And then I went rose gold. And then I was like, I'm going to go pink. I'm just going to do it. And I did. And I actually really love it. And apparently I have the green light from the new Jem movie that they said the pinker the better. So I'm happy about that. I wanted to do it myself, but you know, who knew the movie would be coming down the pike. So
totally on board for that. My wife, whenever she found out that there was going to be a live action movie, she just all giddy and everything.
It's funny, it's a really mixed bag. You know, there are so many diehard fans from this cartoon, and some of them are like really, really freaked out. You know, they're so protective of the brand that they want it to be a certain way. And, you know, and then obviously there are the other fans that are like, I don't care, it's Jem, she's coming back, woohoo, we're so excited. So, and I feel that way too. It's like, it's going to be different than the cartoon. Obviously, it's going to be very different, but I'm all for a new generation, and there will always be the original cartoon. It will always be. And I'm excited to see what John Chu's going to do with it in the production team. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. Well, I'll let one of the other cast members here ask a question, and I'll try to get my stepdaughter down.
Okay, I'll catch that.
Well, my questions are going to kind of be more or less film-oriented, because I am a filmmaker myself. I'm about to graduate film school. I've been pursuing this my entire life. One of the big things I would like to know is, you as an actress, like, because I know you do music videos and stuff, how's the crew, like, react whenever you come around? Because everybody knows that you've been in pop culture so long. Like, do some of the guys kind of lock up, like, oh, my God, it's her? Because it's kind of crazy, because I know that there are some people in the communities and stuff that they freak out when they see somebody like that. I mean,
it's bizarre, and if they do, I don't seem to catch on to it. Or, you know, I'm just a people person, so if I can make people feel as comfortable as possible, that's what I try to do. So maybe I'm not, like a... aware of them maybe geeking out a little, but I think it's so awesome, and I certainly don't judge it in any way. I think it's wonderful, because I remember when I was doing Jem, I got to meet the voice of Scooby-Doo, and I grew up with Scooby-Doo, and I remember Wally Bird, the director, was like, hey, Scooby-Doo's here to do a session, you want to meet him? And I was like, oh my god, yeah. So I haven't had any issues with that, but I do hear often, like, hey, I was at this convention and I saw you, but I was too shy to come up and say hello. And I hear that a lot, and that kind of bums me out, because I'm definitely not a scary person. So I would hope that they would come on over and say hello, and I could, you know, meet them.
Well, I can understand that. Some people, because they get almost stage fright, and like, especially if they're really young and they don't, you know, they saw the cartoons and that's about all they know, and then they're like, oh my god, that's her, and then just walk up and say hi. I'm those kind of people. I'm like, I find it odd, because me being in film, I've seen stuff and done stuff, and just
you're like in the industry, so
yeah, you're in the industry. Well, I mean,
a lot of people, really a lot of people forget that voice actors are people too. You know, I mean.
Yeah.
I know, and especially like if you grow up in Los Angeles, which I did. My sister was in Ohio for a lot of years. She would always call me, go, Sam, who did you see this week? And I was like, oh, well, I almost backed into Nicolas Cage's car, and I was in Starbucks the other day, and there was so-and-so, and, like, you just see celebrities all the time, and it you know, it's fun, but it doesn't mean anything because they're always there, so I guess it just depends what sort of – I've grown up in the business, so to me, I don't relate to that, but maybe I would probably geek out if I met some – I mean, if I met, like, Madonna, you know, some iconic people, I would be like, oh, my God.
Well, that's one other question I wanted to ask because, you know, because of the whole 80s pop culture, I know a lot of that had to influence, like, just the albums that you're putting out now. I mean, I see a lot of almost kind of 80s kind of vibe coming from that when I listen to that music. And yeah. It's like, is Madonna and, like, Lady Gaga and all these ones that have come out, like, all this pop culture stuff, has that really influenced a lot of your stuff?
Well, I mean, I grew up with Madonna. Madonna's kind of like my rite of passage. You know, when I was a kid moving into a teenager, that was the soundtrack for my life. So she for sure has influenced me. And I've as a singer, you sing so many different kinds of music. Like I grew up singing big band music and singing jazz standards and all kinds of things. And then doing session work, you're asked to sing anything. It's like, hey, today can you sound like a 15-year-old Avril Lavigne girl, or can you sound like this or like that? And I've demoed country stuff, and just, I mean, it runs the gamut. So I'm influenced by so many different kinds of music, and I think finally for the first time in my life I really have found my groove as an artist, which is like, I love pop music. I'm a big fan of glam rap, and I love the electronica vibe mixed with some acoustic elements, but also with the rock sensibility. So that's kind of where I sit as an artist and writer. Yeah, I'm influenced by all this. I love the 80s. Like, when 80s stuff comes on the radio, I'm into it. You know, Thompson Twins and Pet Shop Boys and all of that stuff. Annie Lennox.
I'm mostly 80s pop, and I like hair metal. That's probably my favorite genre.
Oh, yeah. I mean, good music is good music. Yeah. You know, Def Leppard and...
Oh, yeah. Well, this is my stepdaughter Naomi.
Hi, Naomi.
Hey.
Hi. Saw you peeking in the corner. How old are you?
I'm 8 years old.
Oh my gosh, that's so awesome! I started singing when I was like 7, a little younger than you, but I was around your age. Do you like music?
Yes.
That's so cool. Nice to meet you, Naomi.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Did you have any friends when you were Did you have any friends when you were doing like your voice acting, and who were they? And like Jim and the Holograms.
You mean like friends that of the cast?
Yeah.
They were quite a lot older than me. It would be like you hanging out with 20-year-olds. So it was a little awkward. So I can't say that I was friends and we were going to lunch and doing stuff outside of the production, because we really weren't. But I mean, I definitely had my friends, you know, from high school that I still was friends with. And my sister I'm really, really close with, and we lived in California together, so my sister I spent a lot of time with. But I wouldn't say I was friendly, like we all were really nice to each other and it was fun to be with the cast, but I can't really say we were, you know, friends hanging out, going shopping, because we
lost somebody.
No, it locked up on me a second, but we came back.
Uh-oh, you're frozen again.
came back. Do you have another question?
Yeah, I have a question.
So you're watching Jen now.
She had a question for you.
What was it?
Don't be shy.
You had a question? You say something?
What was your question?
It's breaking up.
Oh, again. I just said, so you're watching the series.
You're watching the show now?
Okay. Yeah.
You really like the show?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and ask your other question that you have.
like, well,
how old were you when you
started?
That
was really.
How old were you when you started voice acting?
Oh gosh, I don't really like to say because all the fans come up to me at my merch table and are like, I was 8 years old when I watched you on TV, and I was like, oh great, that makes me like 112. But I was a teenager. I was a teenager, and I legitimately was a teenager, so that's you'll understand more when you grow up to be a lady that we don't like to talk about that so much.
Well, you look younger than most of our cast does. So.
Hey.
I still feel like a teenager. I really do.
That's like me. I'm almost 40 now, and I still feel like I'm 15 inside. So, hey, you're only as young as you feel, you know?
You feel like you're 15? I'm still a 12-year-old. Get over it.
Well, I am a... She can attest. Her mother accuses me of being a 12-year-old boy sometimes, so...
All an illusion anyway, right?
We all hang out at Toys R Us on the weekends.
Yeah.
Toys. Yes, exactly.
With the action figures.
Thank you, Naomi. You have anything else you want to say to Miss Naomi?
I want to tell her that I'm a big fan. I can't believe that she's actually on one of your podcasts.
So adorable. You are truly outrageous. And I hope that you listen to all the wonderful advice that Jem gives and you, that you being a good girl, because that's what it's all about, kindness. And
I had the words truly, truly, truly outrageous stuck in my head when you said that.
It's pretty awesome, right?
Yeah.
So nice to see you, Naomi.
Good to see you, too.
Bye. And I'll just say, show's over, Synergy.
Thank you, honey.
Okay. Bye, sweetie.
Can you unplug my thing?
There you go.
Okay.
She has
such a great voice.
Yes, she does.
Raspy little voice. It's awesome.
All right. Chad, do you have any questions for Ms. Stewart? I think he froze up on us. We are having technological problems.
Yeah, I know.
How about Natsume?
All right, am I synced up with you guys?
Yes,
I think so. Yes.
Oh my gosh, fantastic!
We can't see you, but we can hear you.
Yes, that's probably why I'm synced up. I don't want to fall behind. Alrighty, so I'm one of the younger crew members. I was born in 1990, so I didn't grow up with any of this stuff. And I just, you know, I really, a lot of the stuff I've watched, you know, recently. So I haven't had a lot of time, especially now with my limited internet, to look at a lot of Jem and the Hologram. But I did get to watch a lot of the first episode. And like Daron said, I noted a lot of the similar animation things to Transformers. So instead of focusing on that, I wanted to focus on your performance, which I thought was really good. In, like you said, it sounded really genuine, and there was a lot of depth in the character that, you know, even though I was only watching one episode, it felt really deep for, you know, a kid's show especially.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask, when, especially, you say how you guys worked to kind of pull you out of the Jem recording studio and just, hey, we need you to say this one line, you know, just real quick. Or did they actually set up, you know, a schedule and they bring you in for, you know, one day and they have you record all three lines for the entire season and then they send you back to Jem?
Yeah, you know, gosh, it was different every time. Like, I think maybe I would have stayed a little longer after a Jem session to do some dialogue for Transformers, or often when I did Jem, I would come in, like if we did an episode on a Friday for Jem, I may come back on a Monday or Tuesday to do pickup lines, which are lines that maybe they decided they would change, or something continuity-wise got screwed up so they would need to fix it, and then maybe I would do Transformers dialogue while I was doing that. So they were pretty good at like trying to utilize when I was there. But obviously it was such a long time ago, it's hard to remember exactly. I wish I'd had a day planner and written everything down. That would have been really interesting.
Everybody like, keep a journal.
Yeah, right. I had journals, I really did, but I didn't have like a day planner when where I wrote my sessions down, and I really wish that I'd done that, and I really wish that we'd taken a cast photo too, because we never did. It's just so odd. But we're in such a different world now with social media that it was different back then. This was. So now we would have been like, Jim, selfie! No, Transformers selfie!
So on that note, where, I think I've already forgotten it. I just had it in my head.
Oh, that's okay.
We'll come back to it.
Yeah, someone was asking me a question at a Q&A for this Gem cartoon cereal party the other day, and it was a really complex, clever question, and I couldn't even hear it. It was like 10 o'clock in the morning, and I was just like, I can't even, like, what was the question? I couldn't even wrap my brain around it, so I understand.
What are some of your favorite memories from doing Transformers in specifically?
You know, I think working with Wally Burr, the director, who directed Gem, just getting to work with him on anything was such a treat, because he's just so amazing and has directed like thousands of episodes of pop culture cartoons, and I just feel incredibly fortunate to have gotten to work with him on Gem, let alone Transformers as well. So that was pretty awesome. I think from what I remember from the Transformers episodes, I probably was doing my dialogue by myself, and he was maybe reading the other part. So I didn't get to work with the other voice actors because it was something that I kind of jumped in on, as opposed to being in the actual session with the other actors like I was with Gem. So, but I think just getting to see myself in the cartoon, like, oh my God, I'm Ariel, the pink robot, Orion Pax's girlfriend. That's freaking cool. That's so awesome. Like, you know, just to be a part of a small part. I mean, obviously there were a lot bigger roles in Transformers than the work that I did on the show, but just to be a part of that brand is pretty amazing. I get to go to BotCon in June.
Oh no! I wish I could go. Ah, there's so.
That was actually going to be one of my next questions about BotCon. Oh. Yeah.
nice segue there, Ron.
Yeah. So, well, about BotCon, have any of the voice actors, other voice actors, warned you about the Transformer fans? Oh, or
they haven't. It's funny, Jack Angel. Is married to my agent at the time in Los Angeles when I was doing Gem, Arlene Thornton and Associates. He's married to Arlene. He played my dad in Gem, and I would see him all the time when I would go in and read for things in the office. He'd be like, my daughter, it's my daughter, it's my girl. Like, Jack Angel's awesome. And I remember talking to him about Transformers once about, you know, going to a convention, that type of thing, and he's like, well, you didn't do a whole lot on Transformers. I was like, I know, I didn't do a whole lot, but I guess I did more than the general public, so that that's a good thing. Like, Wardon apparently is like one of the
yes,
you know,
Wardon is a very key episode. Matter of fact, it's one of my favorites, and
that's what I hear so much from the fans. Yeah. So, and also Synergy was a leader one, the voice of Synergy, Marlene Aragon. So there's a real connection. And even though I didn't do a tremendous amount of work on the Transformers, it's like we all were swimming together in the voiceover world. So I'm just excited to be invited, and I hope that they're nice to me, because I know they're very, very, very protective of the Transformers brand. But I have nothing but love for them.
They are, and I assure you, you know, I've been to quite a few BotCons myself. I mean, I've got a ton of badges over here, but it can be quite surprising. I know a lot of voice actors have stated how surprised they are at how big the convention is.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be a very pleasant surprise. I know a friend of mine, Paul Eiding, he is such a great guy, and I met him at BotCon in 2010, and Have chatted with him a number of times, and to see him at Shardacon last year, and for him to remember me, and I was in a semi accident last year, and for him to remember that and talk to me about it was very encouraging. And yeah. And you know, you meet and connect with people like that at conventions, and it's so special. You know, I mean, yes, the conventions are big, but you know, you meet people that you will meet, you will make bonds that that are incredible. And
it's true. It's actually been the most amazing part of this whole gem resurgence for me and the Transformers, is getting to go to these pop culture conventions, because I didn't even know they existed until like probably 2004. And it's just the most amazing experience. I meet the most incredible people, and you meet people that are on the fringe for sure, that walk past my table and take pictures of me like I'm in a zoo, like I'm a zoo animal. And then I get the people that are so unbelievably engaged and dancing. Like this one woman, I'll never forget her. She was in a princess outfit and running around in this beautiful princess outfit that she made herself, hand-sewn it. And then I was talking to her, and I was like, what do you do in your life? And she was a fighter pilot. Like,
wow.
Real. She was a fighter pilot, badass female pilot, works for the government. Like, that's her gig. And yet, she likes to let off steam running around in a princess outfit, and she was brilliant and amazing. And she was like, oh my God, if I told my 8-year-old self that I'd be standing here talking to Jem, I would never believe myself. But yet I was so impressed with her, you know, with her accomplishments. It just blows my mind every time I go to one of them. I meet the most beautiful people, amazing people.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, her story, you know, about her as an 8-year-old girl, she had no idea, you know. And I think that's another question I have for you is that, did you realize, well, I'll ask that here in a minute, but the television show, I've mentioned this time and time before, but the television show for me, I was a very sick little boy. I almost died of heart disease when I was 10. And,
wow.
Yeah, and they there for a couple weeks whenever I first contracted it, they didn't think I was going to live or die. They didn't even know what I had at the time. And whenever I was finally released from the hospital, I got my first Transformer while I was in the hospital. One of my best friends gave me one. And I got really wrapped up into that franchise. But for the next 4 to 5 years, I wasn't able to run and play with the... okay.
Did he just lock up again?
It locked up again. I'm sorry.
AT&T loves you.
Yes. But yeah, is it working again? Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the next 4 or 5 years, I wasn't able to do anything. So, but the cartoon, you know, as simple as it was something that I really latched onto and looked for something as something positive in my life. And all of the voice actors, even the small roles, they all came together and made a show that made a very sick little boy, little preteen boy, very happy. You know, I couldn't be like a normal kid. So here I was stuck in the house watching television. But
yeah.
I look back on my childhood and I see I can smile, because even though I was sick, you know, I had something to be happy about. And a lot of the positivity that I got from those shows way back then, here I am almost 40 now, and I still apply those in my life. And my question to you, I guess, with that as a backdrop, did you realize back then when you were doing Transformers and Jem, how much of an impact it would have 25, 30 years later on the kids that were watching it then?
I had no idea. I had absolutely no idea of the levity of what I was doing. I knew that I was doing good work, and I knew that I loved what I was doing, and I thought everybody was so talented, and I loved the stories, and I thought, oh my God, I'm working with the best of the best people and the best director, and like, this is a big, fabulous thing that I'm involved in. I knew that, but I no way knew that all these years later, I didn't even get that my voice was going out to millions of kids and that they were listening to my voice and taking Jem's guidance. And it's kind of mind-boggling to think that I was a part of that, kids growing up, and the stories that I hear. Yours is so beautiful, and I've heard similar stories from people that were sick growing up or had really, you know, not fun childhoods and traumatic childhoods, and it was the only thing that they looked forward to. It was literally like the only thing that made them feel safe. All kinds of incredible stories. Just the levity of it, to me, it will never be just a cartoon. Neither will Transformers. It made a huge impact, and kids really, really bonded with the characters and the stories, and that's important, and I think that's why we're still talking about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, you know, I have friends in my life, and I'm sure the other peoples on the cast do too, that they'll come into our homes and they'll see, you know, I've got glass display cases of toys and everything. Yeah. And they're like, you know, why are you so into these toys? And I'm like, you know, one, they're cool. You know, I mean, they're very interesting. But they also represent a level of positivity in my life.
Yeah.
Like I said, last year I was in a very serious accident, in which I could have perished. And, mentally, for a few months afterwards, I was a wreck. You know, I was in a wreck, and then I became a wreck in my head. And
that happened.
Yeah, but the thing is I would have to come downstairs, and I couldn't work. I couldn't do anything. I was sitting here, and I would look at these toys, and I'm like, you know what? You know, things have been bad before. And those toys reminded me of something that was positive in my life. And I do it for sheer fun and positivity. You know, I mean, in this world where we are so wrapped up in there's so much negativity that hits us all every day.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, our families, and like my spouse, she is like the most wonderful person to me, and she is gold to me. And you know, but you know, you can't always be together, and you know, because you drive each other insane. But you know, those times when you're by yourself, you still need that positive reinforcement. And some people, you know, they work on cars. Some people go fishing. For me, it's Transformers. It's toys. You know, that's the great thing that I get from it.
I think nostalgia, that's why it's so powerful, because it's the sights, the sounds, the smells, the music, the just all of it brings you back to a time, a totally different time, when you didn't have the burdens that we as adults take on. And that's why nostalgia is so powerful.
I think that's why the 80s is still such an allure to me. You know, it's like, I love the music from the decade, the dress. My wife, she said she's glad that the style, I mean, back then she loved it, but she said she's glad the style was gone. I'm like, I still love the big poofy hair. I still love the music. I still love...
What that gone? I love that style.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm one of those kind of guys, though. I mean... But, you know, Duran's got friends that come in his house and say, why do you collect toys? I got friends of mine that come up to me and they're like, why does your car look like a rally car? And I'm like, well, that's Generation 1 Wheeljack. And they're like, what? Because I've been a mechanic. I've built houses. I'm a collector. I'm a filmmaker. You name it. I do all different kinds of stuff. And the thing is I don't settle with just one thing. I consistently keep building on that. And I've had people throughout my life that's influenced me, but I've also gone through a lot of hardships like Duran has. But I've gone through stuff probably even a little more drastic. That I don't even have my parents anymore. I'm by myself, but I've got a very, very strong woman I'm with now. We have two kids. We're happy. And that's all that matters because, you know, push myself through school so that way I can really get my career lifted off the ground. But my thing is, like, when I meet people that are actually in the industry, I'm like, who influenced you to get to where you're at? That's my biggest question. Who influenced you to get to that, to actually, you know, really bring like that whole light to you to be able to, like, this is what I want to do. Like, who really brought that out?
There was a little girl, and this is the honest to God truth. When I lived in, I lived in England. I was born in England, raised in England. Then I moved to Rhodesia, which is now Zimbabwe, when I was like seven, six and a half. And I saw a little British, she's actually Scottish, little girl named Lena Zavaroni. And my parents took me to go see her sing at the Seven Arts Theater in Africa. And she had a show with dancing boys and costumes. And she can, if you ever Google Lena Zavaroni, she will blow your mind. Like this, she was on Johnny Carson because she was this little kid and she could sing her pants off. Incredible. And I saw her sing live and I had a complete epiphany and I knew that's what I wanted to do with my life. And from that moment on, I was obsessed with learning how to sing and I wanted to do what she did. I think we've lost somebody.
No, I was rejoining on my secondary screen here.
But yeah, she started it all for me. She literally did. She infused show business into my soul where I wanted the lights, I wanted the music, I wanted to sing, I wanted all of that. And it became my absolute passion from the time I was 7 years old. I've never been one of those people that didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. I've always known what I wanted. Like, all I've ever done and all I've ever wanted is to sing and perform. And then obviously doing voiceovers was a natural sort of transition into that world when I got an agent and started reading for things and acting. And so Gem was this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful opportunity that I embraced with all my heart. And I still do.
So on that note, I had a different question that related to your singing and to Jim. Mm-hmm. Since you said that you wanted to sing, you know, several years before you even got to Jim, but you didn't do the singing voice in Jim, and obviously now you have your own albums, you know, years later. So how did you make that transition, and when did you make that jump, or, you know, what caused that to fully come to fruition?
Well, I was... I mean, I started singing. I did a big tour of South Africa when I was a little kid, and being in all kinds of places and on a tour bus, driving all over the bush when I was like 8 years old with a band. And then I got signed to a huge agency when I was like 10 years old. And so I've been pursuing my career as a vocalist since a little kid. When Jem came along, all the music and the singing part of the show was already cast in New York, and the voices were being cast in Los Angeles. So it was two separate casts coming together to create the illusion of Jem being one person, but Jem is actually Britta Phillips, the singing voice, and myself, the speaking voice, even though she acts and I sing. That's just the way it was cast. And the fans get a little confused because they did such an amazing job. They matched my speaking voice to her singing voice.
I was actually shocked whenever I found out that it was a different person that did the singing because the voices are so similar.
Yeah, they did really good. My singing voice is different than hers. Her voice is a lot higher than mine. We definitely have different tone, but as far as matching my speaking voice to her singing voice, it was brilliantly, beautifully done. So, you know, it created the illusion.
A quick question. Have you ever performed the theme song to Jem yourself?
You know, live? I always stayed away from that because that's Britta Phillips' territory and I wouldn't want to step on that in any way because I think she's amazing and I would never want to. It would be like her running around saying the dialogue
and yeah,
joke energy. You know, we each had our own roles in Jem, but one time I was talked into singing a punk rock version of it at a convention. They were like, don't worry, it's going to be completely different because I had the same mindset. I was like, no, I don't want to step on British. No, it was so different. It was like, yeah, was truly outrageous. It was crazy. I hardly remember him, but it was fun. I'm not gonna go there again. So
one of those things that you love to forget.
But they did talk me into putting on the pink wig and the makeup. That was the first time I'd ever done that. They're super sweet guys. They're really fun. That's her territory, and I completely respect it.
That's understandable. Natsume, you had another question earlier?
Yes. Let's see if am I all up to speed?
Yep.
Yes.
You're good to go?
Alright, so my other question that I had forgotten earlier and wanted to ask and did not get the chance was basically you had mentioned that basically you would go in for Transformers, you would record lines, and then they might have you go in later to re-record lines, either because they didn't fit or because the story had changed. I was wondering, and same thing with Jim, if you remembered, you know, any of those lines or, you know, how they may have affected the plot or how that may have affected the story, basically how the stories that we know today may have been different had those lines not been re-recorded.
Well, a lot of the time I remember going in to do pickups, and it would really be like a couple of words, and I don't know if they got missed, you know, like, Kimber, run, you know, or something like that. It was usually really quick. But then I would also do my PSA announcements, which was, you know, doing the right thing makes you a superstar, and it was the little PSA commercials that they would have. So from what I remember, we would do the PSA announcement, and then we would do whatever pickups for Gem. Sometimes there wouldn't be any. Sometimes there would. Sometimes there would be this thing called body English, which is like, you know, just sort of sound effects but no dialogue, like you're running or you're climbing a bookshelf or like whatever you're doing, just the sounds that you need to make to do that. So, but they were really good about, I mean, obviously, because they're paying me to come in and do that, they want to get as much done in that time while they have me there as they possibly can, which is kind of what I remember about doing the Transformers dialogue. But then I also remember going in there specifically to do that, so forgive me for not remembering exactly how it all went down, but I think I did go in separately a couple of times to do the dialogue for Transformers, but it didn't have anything to do with Jen, like a separate session.
We totally understand. I mean, I could not expect you to remember something that you said specifically from your teenagers. I'm just wondering if there's anything specific.
Yeah. I loved the PSA announcements. They're so cute. They were really good. I love that they did that, you know?
They were similar. I remember them, too. They were similar to, like, the G.I. Joe, and knowing this is half the battle at the
right.
End. Yeah.
Right. And just giving kids a little, like, hey, you know, doing the right thing makes you a superstar.
I was going to ask Chad to see if he had a question next, but he seems to have dropped off. But hopefully he's probably going through an area where he can't talk. But let's talk a little bit about post-Gem and post-Transformers. What kind of work did you do after the cartoons in the 80s, and more, what are you doing now as far as acting and everything?
Gosh, it's just been so many years. I've done a lot of session work, a lot of session work for songwriters, you know, singing their songs that are in film and TV projects, a lot of songwriting. I really wanted to grow as a songwriter, so I've done a lot of that, written with lots of different people. I've sung on a lot of PlayStation games. I sung on God of War. Ooh. I sung on Twisted Metal Black. I sung on Wild Arms 3 and Everything or Nothing, where I just come in and do sort of these ambient Lisa Gerrard, like really cool ethereal vocals. And also, you know, just tons of commercials. I did lots of, I did McDonald's commercials. I did lots of radio commercials for like Banks and Susie's Deals and Duracell color lenses. And, you know, like Budweiser and all kinds of, a lot of commercials. I did a lot of the, some of the spots for Days of Our Lives, like the announcer spots next on Days of Our Lives, you know, that type of thing. A lot of voiceover work like that. And then just really, really focused on my songwriting and my music, because obviously that's where I started, was as a singer, and then grew into a songwriter. I've been through many incarnations of solo projects and bands, and right now, like, I've released two albums of original material, and I'm about to release a third. I'm not sure of the time frame yet, but I'm getting recording a couple more songs with a producer in LA that I work with. But I sing with a Pink Floyd tribute band called Bricks in the Wall.
Oh, awesome. You have no idea.
Yes. Really, it's like a 13-person huge production. The sights, the sounds, the lasers.
Hey,
the...
teacher, leave them kids alone.
I have no idea. I'm like the biggest Floyd fan. I swear, I love those guys.
Love us.
Have you ever
in this band?
Have you ever played Louisville?
No, we actually, because there are so many of us, like, it's such a big production. It's like kind of a stadium production, to try and get everybody's schedules together when people have kids and the whole thing to tour, which is such a shame because I know that we could, you know, kill it touring wise. But so we do regionally. Like, I'm flying to LA to do the movie, the Gem movie, tomorrow. I come back and we have a huge show, like an outdoor festival in Corpus Christi right by the beach. It's like 4,000 people.
Wow.
And we're doing a huge nighttime outdoor concert.
Wow.
It's going to be so fun. I can't wait. And I just love everybody in the band. They're amazing, super pro talented musicians, and getting to sing my ass off, sing Great Gig in the Sky. I mean, you know, I'm having an absolute ball, but also, you know, want to put a great band together for myself, for my own solo project. Cause I have a bunch of new songs and I'm like jonesing to get out there and play, and going to do a couple of music.
I saw some of the song credits that you had. You had a song in Smallville. I'm a big fan of Smallville. What song did you sing? And you remember?
Oh gosh, I wish I could remember. I did a bunch of stuff for Warner Telepictures where I did probably 6 or 7 songs, and Warner Telepictures, which was like the CW, would place them in a bunch of different shows, like Smallville, like Gossip Girl, America's Next Top Model, Ellen, just a bunch of shows. So I kind of would get a rundown when I get the ASCAP printout, but I don't know specific. I have a feeling it was It's All on You. They use that one a lot, but it could have been See You Never, because they use that one a bunch too. So I don't know.
I wasn't sure. If you know, yeah. I own the entire series on DVD,
and
I'm a big fan of it, and whenever I saw your voice or your song credits on it, I'm like I've heard it and heard her voice singing, didn't realize it, yeah.
Even know it, yeah. And also a lot of the stuff that I've done for songwriters, I worked a lot for an amazing writer-producer, Michelle Weiss Maslin in Los Angeles, and she's placed thousands of songs, and I've sung on a whole bunch of her stuff. So, you know, songs and all, soap operas and all kinds of things where it's not stuff that I've written, but it's stuff that I've sung for her. So, and, you know, sometimes it's a job. You go in and you sing the hell out of it and you do a great job, and then you don't really know where it's going to end up. And sometimes I do find out, and then sometimes I don't. And people tell me, was that you on blah, blah, blah? And they'll send me the link, and I'm like, oh my God, yes, that was a song I did with Michelle, or that was a song I did with so-and-so.
I guess one of the questions I would have is, when it comes to having like a director as a, you know, tell you what to do as a voice actor, and then you have one that actually has you do stuff in live camera. How different is that? Like, how do, because I'm pretty sure, you know, it kind of puts you like almost in a different situation, especially if you have to actually act with the camera going, yeah, than when you're just doing audio.
It's so completely different. And my hat is off to the on camera actors, because, you know, I don't know. I am kind of shy. I am, and I'm not, you know, I'm kind of more of an introvert, but voice acting was so my safe comfort zone, because nobody's watching you, and you can it's just you and your intention and the dialogue and what you're doing and the microphone, and that's your only concern. You're not thinking about blocking, you're not thinking about, you know, where the light is, or like what you look like, or if you have bags under your eyes, or like, and none of that, or if you're 30 pounds overweight, nobody cares. It's voiceover. It's awesome. And I love that. I love, 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 love that. It's a very groovy, wonderful, artistic job. And on camera is more out of my comfort zone. So I'm like heading into to do the cameo in the movie on Monday. I'm shooting on Monday. It's been quite a while since I've been on camera, but I've heard John Chu is amazing to work with, and he's a big fan of Gems, so I'm sure he'll be wonderful. And he works with a lot of young people that probably don't have a lot of experience, so I'm sure he's used to like being really awesome and encouraging. So I think I'm going to walk into something wonderful. That's what I'm hoping.
You know what?
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing I've noticed, because, I mean, me doing, like, I've done stuff on set and such, and I mean, I've acted in some stuff before for some people, but I've also been that crew member. So the way I see it, it's like, you know, when you get in front of the camera, it's almost like a complete different feeling. But I mean, when you're behind the scenes, it's not so much. So, I mean, I can see, like, you know, it's really, really comforting to actually have a real good director be able to tell you exactly what you need to do, and they're kind of almost one-on-one with you. I mean, do you have a lot of one-on-one time with, like, directors whenever you do have to perform like that?
It depends, because I remember I did a guest star on the show, like, way, way back, called Magruder and Loud, and I had to, like, shoot a cop and, like, burst into tears and scream at this policeman that he killed my brother and, like, all this craziness. And I expected more of a connection with the director, but he kind of was not engaged, so it was one of those experiences where I was like, wow, okay, it's really up to me. Like, it really is up to me to just bring it. There's no sort of coddling or any, but I guess everybody works completely differently. And, you know, I've done commercials, like I did a slew of McDonald's commercials where I had, like, the polyester uniform, it's Big Mac's birthday, and they were, like, really great and really encouraging and fun, and every situation has got a totally different tone, and you never know what you're walking into. Mm-hmm. But I've heard awesome things about John Chu, and he was so sweet. Like, he actually reached out to me on Twitter himself. Like, he didn't get his people to call me. Like, he reached out and asked me to be a part of this himself, which I thought was a very classy move, and it was very sweet. So I'm still looking forward to meeting everybody.
Go ahead.
That's one big thing that I've noticed, like, in the industry. Sorry, you're on. That normally what happens is you have a casting director that just literally talks to the actors, and then the actors barely get to know the actual director of the film.
Right.
And it's just kind of odd, because all you guys really get is, like, a script. This is what I need to do. And sometimes you don't know anything about the director that's doing this.
Right.
You get very, very little time. And doesn't – I mean – to me, I would think that would make you feel extremely awkward as an actor that's doing something that you're getting paid tons of money for, but you don't know whether you're doing it right or not. And I don't know, it's just, to me, it's like, I would think you would want more connection with somebody that's an actual director, or somebody that actually has a lot of passion for the film and wants you there because they picked you for that role, instead of, oh, well, I could have picked her, but I picked this other person, and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, in the casting process, you know, it's usually the casting directors and then the producers. You read for producers, and then you know whether you've got it or not. And then you get to kind of work with the director in the rehearsal aspect of it, where that's when you'll get your direction and your connection with the director. But I guess that everybody sails their ship a little differently. And, you know, I've just been so... honestly, so focused on my music for such a long time now that I've not been, like, in the audition world for quite a while. So I remember it being completely nerve-wracking. I remember that, you know, you walk into a room of, like, the casting people and like four or five producers, and you sit at this long table and you're reading with somebody that's not really giving you very much at all. They're reading it like very, very flat, and you're having to come up with everything. So that's your job. So that's what you do. And
right. But another question I got, because sorry, I know you're on. I'm kind of hogging the screen.
Oh, I've got a listener question as well.
This other question I've got is when it comes to music videos, like actually doing like a music videos, do you yourself decide to write out what you want to be put to actually be shown in the music video, or do you actually hire another director to just kind of bring a vision, and then you just come in and bring in the vocals and the talent, or how do you go about that? Because I mean, that is kind of your baby.
Right. If it's my original stuff, it's a total collaboration, and I love to be open to people's ideas. I'm always liking to surround myself with people that know more than I do, so it raises the bar. I'm shooting a video in Los Angeles when I go back for BotCon in June. I'm staying a little longer to shoot a video for my song, Can I Get a Hey Ya? And I got a lot of really cool ideas for it. And, you know, I pitched them to the director, and he's like, yeah, and maybe we can do this. And I'm like, yeah, maybe we can do this. And so it's this awesome collaborative, exchange, which is my favorite, you know, 'cause I don't want to have total dominion. I love collaboration. It's really, really fun. You know, obviously if I have stuff that I'm really attached to and it's my video, then that's going to probably be what plays out. But mm-hmm. for the most part, I really love working with people.
Yeah. I mean, at this, that's kind of how I see it when it comes to like, 'cause I've studied filmmaking throughout the years and all this, and even with music videos and stuff, it seems that the flow of a video tends to go a lot better if you actually have that collaboration versus this is the vision and this is what we're doing and they just have to suck it up. And I don't right. like that kind of approach. I've never liked that approach, 'cause to me, I think it's almost degrading and it's very negative, and I don't like that kind of thing. And I like a lot of positive energy. And I'm so glad that you actually have somebody that's actually doing something like that, because that's just awesome.
Yeah, me too. And I want him to be as excited and as engaged as I am, and have creative input so that it enrolls him in what we're doing, and so he can see his vision come to life on the film as well as my own. And you know, yeah. So I'm all about collaboration.
Do you see yourself when it comes to the point that the video's already, like, all the film work's been done to the point that you're actually sitting down in the editor's room and helping them kind of give them a little bit of ideas of what to do when they are actually editing? Because I've done editing too, and there's a lot of times it's almost like a flow kind of thing, or sometimes it's great to have the person pop in and be like, this is what we like. Mm-hmm. Do you do any of that?
Not usually, but if I see something that I'm not crazy about, then I'll address it. Or you know, if I do have some ideas about continuity and what I think would be smart to, you know, to morph into, then I will speak it. But you know, I just love it. It's kind of fun to just focus on being the artist and work on just the emotional world of what I'm trying to say with the song, and throw my ideas out there with the director and have him sort of help me and guide me to where I want it to go. So
the nice trust cushion where it's like you don't feel like you have to kind of keep eyes on stuff.
Totally.
That's awesome. That's
because I don't like to wear too many hats, because I really don't think that's smart. People that wear too many hats, I think you diffuse. You can diffuse it, and I think it's really smart to surround yourself with great people that are really good at different things. Because you can't, I mean, some people can do everything. Prince can do everything. God bless Prince. He's a freaking genius.
Yes, he is.
But you know what I mean? Like, it makes more sense to me to delegate. I think delegating to really talented people is really smart.
I have a listener question from fellow Texas resident Michael Perez. He has a question that says, with the various mediums you have experienced in your career, would you consider doing voice acting again in the future for a Transformers project, either animated or other animated feature in the down the road?
Absolutely. Yes, I would love it. Oh my God, to be a part of the Transformers brand in a new way would be amazing. I would absolutely love it to play some female kick-ass robot. Yeah, or whatever they would want. Yes, I would love it. And Hasbro's awesome. So yes. I'm actually, I did a project when I was in Nashville a couple of years ago called Pound Dogs. It was an animated short comedy animated film, which was really funny, created by Mike Silva. And it did really well at all the festivals, and he's putting a new one together that he wants me to be involved in. And so, yeah, I just want to keep working and working with great people and doing voiceovers and music and writing, and all of that creative stuff makes me really happy. It's kind of all I know how to do.
Chad messaged me. He's having connection issues, so he's not going to be able to get back on. But Natsume, do you have any other questions? I think we lost her. We are having so many technical issues tonight.
Am I like really far behind?
Hey, there she is.
I'm lagging again, apparently.
It's okay. We'll wait for you.
Okay, hopefully I'm back up to speed. Anyway, yeah, I'm sure that I had more questions because I developed a lot of them while I was watching the show, but I didn't write them all down. I think I got all the major ones out of the way, so I can't think of anything else for right now.
Okay. What about you, Plasticon?
I'm still thinking because I'm like, my mind sits in the film world. That's where it sits. And then when I see an actress or an actor, I'm like, okay, what questions can I plug? It's one of those things because give you a little background story. I started trying to do filmmaking back when I was a kid, but basically I didn't have camera, like motion picture cameras. All I had was like photography. So I did a lot of that and then got into actual film cameras and stuff like that throughout junior high and high school. And my mind's always been in the film world, but it's never been like, I never like had like the funds to do it until like the past 4 years. I actually got in because the military provided money for me to be able to go to college to actually get this career off the ground. And it's like throughout the years, I'm like still trying to get used to being able to talk to actresses and actors about what to do and myself, because I am new to the thing. I'm actually relatively new. And the thing is I'm like really, really influenced by people that have been in pop culture for a long time and what they've done and how their career path is going. And I can understand, you know, as you're saying, you know, you, throughout the, like the 80s and stuff like that, you still try, you're struggling, still doing the stuff though, still pushing it. Okay. And it's people like you that actually influence me, because it's people like you that actually are like, I keep going after it because it's a passion.
Yeah.
And yeah. That's one big thing a lot of people don't understand when it comes to being a filmmaker is I'm not trying to get it for the glory. It's just a passion. It's something I love to do.
Yeah. And that's the most important thing. You have to have a passion for it. I think I lost you there. I can't see you anymore.
Chad was actually able to rejoin us.
Hey, Chad. But, hi. You know, kudos to you for I can see, I can feel your passion for it. I really can. And I have the same passion for what I do. And it is, it's a really, really tough road. And without the passion, you would dissolve into doing something else. I mean, there's no way you could sustain because you have to love it. You have to not be able to not do it. You know, that's the bottom line. I can't not sing. I can't not do what I love. I'm not who I am if I'm not being creative in some way, you know, with my art. And it sounds like you're the same way. So, God, I really encourage you, and I think that's awesome.
Yeah. I have one question.
Hey.
Before, since, and I don't know if it's been asked, but do you ever see yourself doing voiceover again?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I was just saying that I did a project in when I was in Nashville called Pound Dogs, and they're going to do another project that I think has been picked up for, I don't know, they've got MTV interested or something and it's a bunch of group of talented people that they want me involved in it somehow. But yeah, I would love to. And you know, the celebrities kind of took the wind out of my sails back in the day when all the voiceover stuff was really rolling, and I started to be like, oh, I'm up for the lead in Spider-Man up against Alicia Silverstone and Drew Barrymore. It started to become a little tricky. And, you know, I think the idea of recognizable, really, really recognizable voices from visible actors started to become the norm, where they were willing to pay a lot more money to have somebody like Drew Barrymore, who I think is awesome. They're amazing, super talented people. But it changed the business for sure. So I just really started to focus on my music, which was obviously what I've been so passionate about. But yeah, I would jump into the voiceover world 1,000 times over. I love it. It's so much fun.
Really. By the way, prepping for this, I actually listened, I believe, to about 30 of your YouTube videos with all your music on it.
Oh.
You have a spectacular voice. Thank so you.
She does. Yes, you do. Yeah.
Thank you.
It's very, very talented.
Thanks. It's very strange to bridge the gap with the Gem fans, and they're like, you can't sing because you didn't do the singing for Gem. And I'm like, well, okay, but yeah, I do sing. You know, Britta acts and I sing, and we, you know, it's been hard for some of the fans to like make that connection, but slowly they're starting to see that like there's more to Britta than just her singing. She does voiceovers, and I'm a singer and a songwriter, so it's fun. It's awesome.
Kind of like Hugh Laurie, the guy who played on House. He is actually a phenomenal singer.
He is. He's amazing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's so true. And he's British with an American accent.
Yes. Yeah.
He's so talented.
He only has an American accent when he's on television. Then he he's completely British otherwise. I was listening. It was weird seeing him for the first time on it, like a documentary, and he was like talking in his native accent, and it's like, hold on, that's not the same guy.
Yeah, it's so good.
Well, since we've mentioned it a few times, you want to tell the listeners about your website and your YouTube channel?
I'm really easy to find if you just Google Samantha, like Bewitched Samantha, and Newark, like New Jersey, Newark, New Jersey, SamanthaNewark.com, and then I have links to my YouTube page, my Twitter, my Facebook, my Reverb, my all of that stuff, and my bio, and my pics, and my videos, and all of that social media stuff that one needs to have nowadays. So, yes, I would love it. I love hearing from the fans. I really do, and I do administrate my own Facebook page because I get a lot of people saying, is this really you? Is this really Samantha? It's me. So I would love to hear from you guys. And I have a guest book on my website as well, my official website, and a mailing list. So let me know what you think about Gem and Transformers, and I'd love to hear from everybody. So.
Awesome.
Well, I have a question.
Yes.
Because there is a toy reviewer that reviews toys that's actually in the community. His name's Emgo, and he's always plugging Gem. Are you aware of him?
Emgo. No, I don't know that name.
You need to find him because it's hilarious, because Shockwave has a infatuation with Gem. It's fun. Okay. You will love it.
Jizz. I know there are a bunch of fabulous drag queens that do Gem, which I just love. But I've not heard of him, so I'll have to look him up. Yeah.
Look him up. He's a great guy. He's hilarious.
How do you spell it?
Emgo?
Yeah.
E-M-G-O. I think it's 316 after the end because he's a wrestling fan.
Okay.
He's pretty easy to find actually on YouTube.
Yeah. Thank God for the internet. I mean, it's just opened up everything. It's pretty incredible.
Well, like shows like this. Okay. I mean,
That's one question I was going to ask you. Like when it comes to like just the social network now, because it's like everybody within like all these little bitty communities, even dealing with like, you know, networking through like filming and all this stuff. How's this changed like the way the industry runs for you now?
Well, I mean, as far as marketing myself as a musician, it's changed everything, because what an indie musician can do now with social media is basically what a label used to have access to. So you can market yourself, you can find your fan base, find your niche, and market yourself for free, which is also amazing. I mean, if you're smart, you can utilize social media in a really brilliant way, and I just think it's incredible. It's also saturated the market in a lot of ways, because now everybody can be put up a YouTube video and sing and do whatever they do. So, I mean, there's so much out there, but I'm not complaining, because I just feel like it's the way that I can reach my fans in a way that I would never be able to. So I think it's awesome. Really, really awesome.
I can...
Back to the artist.
I'm going to bridge over just a little bit, because I didn't get to see the part where I was gone for a while. You're the lead singer for a cover band for Pink Floyd. Is that?
No, I'm actually one of there are three backup singers that do all the iconic, to the record, beautiful background vocals of the Pink Floyd catalog. And then we sing Great Gig, which is the iconic, you know, amazing, great guy. And we split it, the three of us. I usually take the last half, and I work with two other beautiful, super talented women, Tiffany Bell and Rachel Bean. They're incredible. You can look us up on bricksinthewall.com and read about everybody. And we've got the most fantastic musicians, incredible sound guy that's like worked with, done huge festivals with Duran Duran. And we got a super, super pro team. And we really put on an awesome show. So
I wish. And you've got a show coming up, if I.
Yeah, we do. Corpus Christi on the 10th of May.
That's awesome.
I know, so much fun. And hopefully we'll have time to frolic on the beach before soundcheck. That's what I'm hoping. Being that we're so landlocked here in North Texas. Yeah. But it's been super sweet to talk to you guys. I hate to cut it off, but I actually have to pack.
Yes, we actually need to wrap ourselves. But thank you so much for joining us on the show.
You guys were wonderful. This was so much fun.
Thank you so much, and I wish I could be at BotCon, but I hope you have a safe journey there in June, and hope you enjoy that show. And good luck on the filming with the live action.
Gemma. Yeah, I know it's gonna be.
Yeah,
so-
major good luck on that, because I understand how frustrating and very, very nervous you probably are.
It's a bit nerve wracking, so I'm gonna take in all the good vibes and the good luck from you guys, and I'll take it with me and just. So much. You've been wonderful. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Take care.
Show over, Synergy. Bye, you guys. I'm going to click off.
All right. Take care.
Yeah. You too. Bye.
Chad, you you wanted to talk about TF Expo real quick?
I believe it's this weekend. It's in Wichita, Kansas. It is an unofficial fan-ran convention. I'm not sure where it's going on at. I know they have a Facebook page. I know they have an internet website. So if you look it up on Google, I'm sure you'll find it. It's TF Expo. I believe it's tfexpo.net, if I remember correctly, but I could be wrong. But, yeah, they put on a good show every year. And if I remember correctly, they have
it's tfexpo.com.
I cannot remember the lady's name who played the character.
Sumali Montano and Neil Ross.
There you go. So you knew more about it than I did.
I just pulled it
you
up.
You wanted to talk about it.
I just pulled it up on the internet. Achieved.
I can't do that and be on here at the same time. So, but yeah, my buddy Phil, he puts that on, and, everybody who's in the central U.S., get to Wichita, Kansas this weekend. Go have some Transformer fun.
Awesome. Also, before we wrap, I want to remind people that TFYLP is brought to you by Captured Prey. CapturedParade.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. CapturedParade.com, where you can pre-order Masterpiece 22 Ultra Magnus for $182, and also TF's or Toy World Swamper for $99. Some great pre-orders.
It's cheaper than anywhere else.
Yes. It's awesome. And great service.
Yes.
Yes. Well, guys, unless y'all have anything else you wanted to mention before we close. That's
me. Awesome guest.
Yes. Yeah. I do want to thank Miss Newark again for joining us, and all of her fans, both Transformers and Gem fans, for joining us. You want to download the audio version of this episode, it will be available on tftalk.net probably sometime later in the week after May 2nd, 2014. I'm a little bit behind. I didn't get to last week's episode yet because I, as you can tell, I'm a little bit under the weather, and I've been busy with my wife being sick and now me, so it's a miracle I was even to get on here tonight. But I will get that up as soon as I can, and then I will get this episode up shortly thereafter, so you can download it there. And we're also available on iTunes and on Android via Double Twist. Check us out there. Well, I'm going to close unless you guys have anything else left. Alrighty. Well, we will see you next time on TFYLP.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@tfylp.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.